So it seems like we have, men can do different things that'll, contribute to perfection, and then there are some things which are perfection per se. So I was wondering if Rebbe could elaborate on what exactly is perfection per se. Like, is it here, the Rambam says that about one place, just in knowing things versus being able to think, clearly, like he talks about Rebbe Akiva in one place.
What does he say about Rebbe Akiva?
Says that he achieved true human perfection or something like that because he, not soul obviously, but because he said he knew when two things contradicted each other and didn't just make a mistake and think that they contradicted each other and knew when he had proved something. So, in other words, is perfection per se, is that being able to think clearly, or is it attraction to knowledge, or is it knowing things? And also, what do we mean when we say that, like, perfection, like, just in general? You could just,
small question. Well, let me start descriptively. Descriptively, perfection is where the individual's emotions don't guide the person. The person doesn't have no emotions and has to satisfy his emotions. So people are thinking that there's no emotions, you don't satisfy your emotions, and that's perfection, that's a mistake. Because man has emotions and has to be satisfied. So what it means that the guidance of how to do that and how that takes place, the execution of it is under the supremacy of the mind. The mind determines. It's not the emotions that make the determination, it's the mind. That is a practical aspect of perfection. In other words, a non-perfected person will make a decision based upon his emotion. The perfected person has emotions, but he looks into his emotions rationally and he determines how to act in a way that is beneficial for himself and for his emotions. Now, that's one aspect of perfection. Okay, in other words, the supremacy of the mind. Okay, so for that, the person has to have knowledge, because otherwise you can't think properly. So you have to, in order to have the mind, you have to have the knowledge. Now, give me 1 second. That's the practicality of perfection. Now, given that that's the case, a person realizes that the enjoyments of the mind are superior to the enjoyments of the body. Okay? So that insofar as a person is able to, he indulges in the enjoyments of the mind to a greater degree. But that's a capacity that everybody has to a different degree. And you can't just jump and say that that I'm going to like a lot of times in the yeshiva, many times guys came to yeshivas and they try to throw themselves into learning 24 hours a day, and it would last for a few months, but then it wouldn't last, and it would break up. And the reason is because they didn't have their capacity, and they're just trying to push themselves beyond their ability. So it's not a wise thing to do. I mean, there again, the supremacy of the mind tells you that you don't do something that's out of range, okay? They proceed slowly. But when we say the perfected individual, what we mean is, of course, what we just mentioned, that practically his mind determines what he does, and not his emotions. Again, his mind determines how to satisfy his emotions. That's also important, okay? But when we speak about a really different levels of perfection, we say that we mean different capacities for the person to indulge in the area of the mind, of Chachma. The ultimate state of perfection of man is that his emotions are involved in Chachma, pursuing Chachma, and he has a love for Chachma which leads automatically to a love of the source of Chachma, which is God. From the learning and the ideas, he begins to see the greatness of God, and he's awed by God, and whatever he studies brings him to that awe. So that's really the state of perfection for man, because that existence is the best existence for man. But that's the ultimate. Okay, on the way to the ultimate, there's different levels. A person reaches a level where his decision-making process is done by the intellectual, by his mind, that's already the level of perfection.
When you say that level of existence is the greatest level of existence of man, do you mean like in terms of his own happiness, or in terms of his harmony with the rest of the world? Like, what does that say to mean?
Himself. His own happiness.
His own happiness.
So when we talk about perfection, Ren, that's something that like you would apply in terms of like perfection for a Malach or something.
No.
It's a different...
Well, it's not totally different, because the Malach is a being that doesn't have any emotions. So it naturally is involved in the areas of ideas.
Right.
But for a person, that's not possible. Unless the Rams is a Moshe Rabbeinu reached over. But an average person, that's not possible. So you can only do it to a certain degree and enjoy learning. And so far as he enjoys learning, he is stepping into the world of perfection. See, that's perfection. In other words, one definition of perfection is in terms of how the person functions. Okay. The other definition of perfection is what are the activities that are considered perfected activities, the best activities for man. Okay. And that's the area of knowledge. Okay, now it comes under two different questions. Yeah.
Perfection is in such a large part due to man's emotions having dominance over his decisions, then why is the way that we go about correcting that by learning ideas instead of just everything going to psychoanalysis?
The reason is because when one learns ideas, one learns the appreciation of knowledge. Without the appreciation of knowledge, you really aren't in that world of perfection at all, because you don't know what it is. The ultimate goal is that the energy should go into the world of knowledge. So you have to indulge in the world of knowledge. If you don't know what it's like, you don't know what it is, you're never going to be attracted to it, you never will enjoy it. So really, that's why we say in the bracha of V'arev, bracha of Birchot V'arev, another channel we can't know, that God should make it sweet. So maybe we should enjoy the Torah. Like God now says, Zmiros hayu l'chukecha. Your laws are to me like Zmiros. They're sweet. In Tehillim you mentioned it many times. The appreciation and the enjoyment of knowledge. So a person can have a good psyche, but what is he going to do with it? What he's supposed to do with it is use it for the greatest purpose that man is made for, which is to understand and to gain knowledge and to appreciate knowledge and to enjoy it. So you have to indulge in knowledge, otherwise you're not going to know what it is. You won't be able to enjoy it.
Why do we spend so much of our time learning Gemara or singing? Wouldn't it be more beneficial to learn Tamei HaMitzvos you know what you're doing before you learn the exact details of what you're doing? It seems like you're just following the system blindly, and there's no meaning until you understand what you're doing.
Okay, anybody want to answer that? Well, your question is, see, Tamei HaMitzvos gives you the reasons why you're doing things, which is very important, of course. Well, if you don't have a reason why you're doing things, so then you're just acting blindly. But in learning, you're involving yourself in the activity which gives you the taste and the appreciation of the beauty of Chochmah. So that's extremely important, because that's really the without that experience, you'll say Tamei Mitzvos is in order to learn. But what is learning? So learning draws a person, because it has a certain beauty to it, of knowledge. So that experience is important, because that's the greatest experience that man can have. So even without Tamei Mitzvos, the learning alone is something.
Why is it the greatest experience?
Why is it the greatest experience of man?
Yeah.
Well, you can look at it from two standpoints, from the psychological and the philosophical. From the psychological, it's something which gives a person a tremendous enjoyment, and without much effort. And it gives, that's why scientists appreciate, they rather, like one of them, I forget who it was one of these physicists, he says, well, for you to have entertainment, you have to go to a movie. He says, for me, I just do my math, or I do my physics, and I enjoy myself. So the enjoyment is far greater. The nature of the enjoyment, the quality of the enjoyment is far greater when a person is involved in thought and solves problems and is actively involved in thinking and comprehending than any physical enjoyment. So psychologically, he's far.
Why
is it greater? Why man is constructed that way?
Not really. Like, what makes it greater?
It's a greater experience. What makes it greater is it's more enjoyable.
Like
the Ramban says, ain't something like that, Tarsus Sekus. What?
If you understand psychology, would that explain why it's more enjoyable than watching a movie?
I don't know if there's any explanation for it. There's just the capacity for man to sublimate his energies and to put into the higher spheres. And the sphere of thought is a very strong attraction if a person can do it. I'm not saying every person can do it. Most people can do it. And practically everybody can do it to a certain extent. So when the person does it, they realize that they're attaining a tremendous satisfaction. The person who works out of Tysus, they would not say, I rather would have watched television during for that time. They realize that this was very enjoyable. Maybe hard to get into it, but once they do it, they experience an enjoyment, and when they look back, they're not sorry about it. They're, on the contrary, they're happy they spent the time that way. And it has an afterglow also. In other words, you enjoy it, and then afterwards the person can think about the ideas and enjoy the beauty of the ideas. I guess because man is, there's an element in man that appreciates beauty. But there's a physical beauty, but there's the beauty of ideas. That's why Chazal recognized that. In science now, recently, they came to that conclusion, that the beautiful ideas are the ones to pursue. But Chazal say, Dvash v'cholav tachas l'shanech, that the ideas that are beautiful and give a person an aesthetic satisfaction. Now, why that aesthetic satisfaction draws me in more than anything else is hard to, I don't know if we can explain it. But it is true. You see, people that are, well, Plato says very simply, he says, people that have the choice to involve themselves in money or in honor will choose honor over money. Because, see, people will give away their money in order to get honor. And he says, people who have the ability to indulge in honor and in wisdom will go for wisdom. Because the philosopher is the person that has the choice. So he has a greater enjoyment out of the wisdom and the knowledge than he does out of honor. And he shuns honor, and he really just goes for the knowledge. I remember reading, not everybody gets the knowledge that way. Some people gain knowledge for a different reason. But there are those people that are in knowledge for the enjoyment of the knowledge itself. That's like, I remember there was this woman that she won the Nobel Prize. I forget what field she was in. But she was so busy, she didn't even realize it. And they came to her house, took it, and that was it. Went back to her studies, because she enjoyed her studies so much. So you see that a person who has the enjoyment of knowledge can really define it so enjoyable that they forego everything else. So why this is so is a good question. it would show that the man is made and is structured psychologically in a way that the greatest thing that he has, which is his mind, also gives him the greatest satisfaction.
Don't you see people do that in other, and people do that for honor. People will give away their whole lives for honor. People, you know, spend their whole lives
right.
You know, for money and stuff. So
that's true. But Plato says if a person has the ability to enjoy both, in other words, the people that will do everything for honor are the J.P. Morgans, the wealthy. What's the word?
Philanthropists.
The very wealthy philanthropists. So they were, but those aren't the guys that are theoretical. They're the ones that build the colleges for the theorists. But you see, they spend their money on building college for their knowledge, and that gives them honor. So you see that they recognize the priority of the knowledge. But what their money is good for is promoting something higher. So even they recognize it, but they're not the ones that can involve themselves. They don't have the ability. Yeah.
So according to what we said, somebody who's not at a very high level, what he really would want to do is involve himself in ideas.
Right.
But we see that I know, like, you know, they have these, like, they talk about that at a certain point a person wants to involve themselves in chesed, tzedakah, mishpat, right? So wouldn't that, like, how does that work together?
That's a good question.
I mean, just like, you know, to achieve perfection, like, you know what I mean? Like, not to put you on a higher level because you have some type of, like, ego thing. You do
right.
And the other type, you know.
Right. Well, the thing is, in our system, the way it works is that the knowledge of the Torah leads us to a love of God. And the love of God leads us to a love of His creation. And man is the highest level of His creation. So therefore, whenever man, who is God's creation, is in need, so we realize that it's God's will that we assist the person. So so the love for man stems from the love of God and His creation. Because that's why we say, V'achlarecha kamocha doesn't mean your friend. It means your friend also. It means the Jew that you never met also. So, because we say he's also Brias Hashem. So, Avas Abrios. And a non-Jew as well is a Nivra. The Borei Olam created him. So, he gave him a special level of existence. And therefore, whenever that is in jeopardy, we're obligated to jump in and to help the individual.
Isn't love being, like, used equivocally then? Because, like, love of God is, you feel like, a, you know, attraction to chachma, you know, the guy's attracted to ideas, you know, the aesthetic thing in him. Or I don't see how that would result in love of people. Like, how does that work? Like, is that just, like, a result that happens at a certain point?
In other words, it's a result of the love of God. You have to have a love. The love of God involves the love of His creation.
Mm-hmm.
Because that his intelligence, if we could use that word, dictates that he acted in a certain way. So and that's part of his essence. So the fact that man was created the way he was, it emanates from God's essence. So the love of God, ipso facto, means the love of His creation. That's what we say. Just like He acts towards His creation with chesed, so you too act. Because if you have a love of God, so then you automatically have a love of the things that he created, His creation, or that He wills to be in existence. I mean, it's a little abstract, but it's very hard. If you use more abstract words, they're more correct. If you use more common words, they're less accurate. But in other words, a person that has the love of the Creator will have to love that which the Creator deems worthy of existence. So, which is man. It's not just man, but even an animal, if it's Pitzar, you will have to remove the Pitzar. But the concept is that the love of God demands the love of that which God loves, so to speak. So therefore, you're attached to God loves man, and He recognized, He gave man at Chaser Matnev Orim, he gave him the highest status, so he has a love for man. So if you have a love for God, you automatically have to have a love for that which he loves. Using the word love, not in the real sense in relation to God, because it's not the same thing. Yes?
Back to the prior discussion about learning Talmud. So you said that we learn Gemara because of the enjoyment we get out of it.
The experience of the intellect.
Right, so why can't that enjoyment be found, the experience be found in learning Talmud Mitzvot?
See, Talmud Mitzvot is philosophy. Philosophy, you have to have a method of thinking before you approach philosophy. Otherwise, you just approach it looking for reasons that are shallow. So you have to come to philosophy armed with a system of correct thinking. And that system of correct thinking you get from Gemara, because that's where the hard thinking is.
So the system of correct thinking meaning fact, or is
it no. To how to organize fact, how to set up theories, how to test your theories, those elements which give the person the ability to think correctly.
And that is the beauty in itself.
What?
And that has that system.
And that has
the
beauty
in
itself.
At what point, though, the person's way of thinking is always going to be developing. So, at what point can he say, "Okay, I have a system of thought," and then go into time and this?
When he can learn a very difficult figure well, and he sees his thinking is in line like with Rishonim, and when he sees that, and when he has ample breadth of knowledge, then he can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But he has to be on a level. If a person can't learn the cipher, because it's too difficult for him, he's not on a level.
What do you mean by what is having an ample breadth of knowledge?
Because if you're going to be a philosopher, you have to have a certain breadth of knowledge to work with, certain facts. If you're trying to philosophize Torah and you don't know enough Torah, so then you don't have enough facts in Torah, so what are you philosophizing? Philosophizing one thing, which can be explained in many ways, and if you had a greater knowledge of the mitzvos, I mean, you can't philosophize mitzvos unless you really know all the mitzvos. You know, you can't study two mitzvos and give philosophy. Maybe you're right, but you have to have the breadth of knowledge of all the all that which is in the area that you're going to philosophize. Yeah.
I noticed with myself and with others that when it comes to certain proofs that go against emotions, that once the proof is understood, then still I'll find myself slipping into really simple questions, and then 2 minutes later recognizing that and seeing it's the same question you asked before. So what does that mean in terms of the mind's understanding of the thing?
That means that the mind understands it, but there's always a counterforces in the emotions. So, and that's to be expected, that's normal. Because many times things that are proven to you, the results put you under a certain pressure. And you might not like it. It might not be the pressure you think, but in your mind it might appear to you as a pressure, so you'd rather be free of it. So therefore your mind, even though your mind tells you the proof is correct, your emotions might kick up and set you back. That's always a battle, the emotions of the mind.
But there is an apprehension of the thing?
It doesn't necessarily mean the apprehension is weak.
Mm-hmm.
There could be an apprehension, and you could understand it, but then the mind, even though it understands it, but the emotions are not satisfied with the outcome. Could be. I mean, I really have to have a particular case because there are different reasons for this, for that. I'm just giving you a broad generality. Yes.
Can you explain the breakdown of Torah into Torah Shavuot, Sabbath, Torah Shavuot, and Talmud?
Okay, hold on 1 second. Let me, there's one more further case. And that is, the experience of learning Torah also has an implicit, carries with it an implicit proof. because the enjoyment of the learning and the ideas and the subtlety and the beauty, the aesthetic appreciation of the halacha, rings in a person's mind as something that is true and real. So through the experience of learning, like Chazal say that b'chol yom b'einecha kechadashos, every day there should be like nitna mi-Sinai, every day. Because when a person really sees the ideas, he really sees what Sinai is. So that experience carries with it also a proof, like what is the thing on the pasuk by Daranoch that says, "Sasa nochi elam rasecha kamote shalom rav." That happiness and that appreciation of the ideas shows them, strikes the mind as something which must be true and must be real. Otherwise, you wouldn't be experiencing that. So that's another reason why Torah itself carries with it the tamei mitzvos as well. Okay, I gotta go. Okay, good question.